Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling. Pharma Talk Radio is a nonprofit program supported by the Conference Forum to disseminate helpful information to life science professionals and patient advocates. Today's show centers around the topic of partnering with patients in the development and life cycle of medicines, a call for action. The topic of the show is inspired by a paper of the same name, which was published in 2015 by the Drug Information Association, or more popularly known as DIA. I'm pleased to welcome two of the authors, Dr. Anton Hoos, head of medical at Amgen Europe, and Mark Bouton, who is the CEO at National Health Council. Anton, who goes by Tony, welcome, and please tell us about the work you are leading at Amgen.
Hello, Valerie, and thanks very much for having Mark and me on the show. I'll gladly give you an idea about what I'm doing at Amgen. I'm the senior physician for Amgen in Europe, and that encompasses basically all therapeutic areas and all medical departments in every country where we're active in Europe. And part of my job is, of course, to work with our external stakeholders and of significant importance there of our patients. And I've been so passionate about involving patients for so many years in my career that this has now become a significant part of my work at Amgen as well.
Thank you. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. And can you tell us about the National Health Council and an overview on the work you are leading?
Sure. Thank you, Valerie. Happy to join you and Tony. The National Health Council is an umbrella organization of patient advocacy organizations in the United States. It was created in 1920, and we work on issues that are important to all people with chronic disease and disabilities. We do not do anything that is condition-specific, only on issues that are systemic in nature. So historically, we've been very engaged in ensuring that people with chronic disabilities have access to care and that the care they receive gets better. So that includes improving treatments and developing treatments where there are no treatments for certain conditions. We also work in the area of ensuring that the care that patients received is directed by patients, and that has allowed us to really start to focus more heavily in delivery design issues, quality measures, payment reform, really looking to ensure that the great new treatments that are being developed currently actually make it into the hands of patients and are used in a way that is appropriate to the clinical outcomes that are aligned with their personal goals. And I should say that while our governance is controlled by the patient advocacy organizations in the United States, groups that many people would recognize like American Cancer Society, American Heart, and many others, we also have in membership the biopharmaceutical sector, the device and diagnostic sector, generics, payers, family caregiving organizations, and provider associations. And we do that because it's a core value and principle for us to understand the perspectives of all stakeholders, work through the lens of the patient, and really accomplish solutions that meet the needs of all parties from a patient perspective.
Thank you. Mark, can you share with us your view on what does partnering with the patient mean? What does that mean to you?
Well, in the context of this paper, what partnering with the patient means to me is that you have to start with the patient's perspective. Now, there's a long-held truth in the biopharmaceutical sector that says you start with the science. And while the science is incredibly important, and I think we all know and acknowledge that, you really have to understand the problem you're solving from a patient perspective. And historically, we've used surrogates to understand the patient perspectives. Oftentimes doctors, sometimes researchers, sometimes others. And they will identify what they think is most important to the patient. But when you ask people with complex chronic conditions what is most important to them, in many instances, what they tell you is most important is different from what the surrogates are telling you. And that fundamentally says to me that when we're looking to develop treatments to solve problems that the surrogates have identified, we're often solving problems that are not most important to patients. So we're not even starting from the right place. partnering with patients, from my perspective, means when a company reviews its asset portfolio and says, we only have enough resources to develop 10% of the assets we have, and they go through that long calculation of which ones they're going to develop, a key criteria should be, does it answer a problem that's important to the patient and their family caregivers? When they start to move forward in developing that asset, they start to look at the research plan and the research questions they ask, and they look at those questions through the lens of the patient to make sure they get them right. Work with patients to identify what are the right patient-reported outcomes. How do you design the clinical trial so that it is something that is appealing to a patient and their family caregiver, not something that becomes so burdensome that they cannot and will not participate? Understanding benefits and risk from the perspective of the end user, key and critical. When the product comes to market, how do you get information about patient preference into labeling? How do you communicate that? What do you do when the product goes generic? What if you learn a new risk once the product is on the market? What if the product is removed from the market? Those are all great points where engaging the patient to understand their perspective would help improve the success of the product, but most importantly, improve the value to the patient and ultimately the health outcomes of the patients. So that, in a nutshell, is what partnering with the patient means to me in this context.
And so what are some of the potential consequences when we don't take it from the patient's perspective?
Well, there are a lot of interesting consequences, and so it really depends on where you are in the drug development timeline or life cycle. So, for example, virtually every large biopharmaceutical company has had the experience of spending $1 billion plus, sometimes $2 billion, developing an asset and bringing it to market only to find out that it doesn't answer the question that was important to the patient and the patient doesn't want to take the product. That says to me that there's huge opportunity to fail a lot faster. And while that sounds negative, if you fail fast, if you fail at the very beginning of the life cycle, that allows you to reinvest that money in a product that will be higher value and lead to higher health outcomes. If you don't ask the right research questions, it can put you down a pathway that is going to lead to a product of less value to the patient. In clinical trial design, if you have not accounted for the patient perspective, which is so much more than just their disease or condition, it's about what's going on in their lives, what are their goals, what are their aspirations, because we tend to forget that people with chronic conditions who might be participating in a clinical trial, they're still people. They still have jobs. They still have families. They still have commitments. They have social relationships. And these clinical trials can, in many instances, make it really, really difficult for them to live their lives. Or they may simply not be able to access the clinical trial if it's at an academic medical center and they live in rural Maine. So lots of opportunities to improve the system. The last example I'll give you, and there are many more, relates to benefit risk. Historically, we've assessed benefit risk largely at the regulator level, often behind closed doors, largely from the perspective of surrogates, not the patients. And there's emerging wealth of evidence that shows that when you ask patients about the trade-offs when it comes to benefit risk, we often are getting that determination wrong, and we have an ethical obligation to ensure that that benefit risk trade-off reflects the perspective of the end user, not the surrogate.
Okay, thank you for that insight. When I hear the statistics out of Tufts that a drug can cost upwards of $1 billion, it still blows my mind. So when you say it is better to fail fast, you can see why. But to your earlier point that putting the patient at the center of drug development could certainly reduce some unnecessary costs just by understanding the patient's needs. So thank you, Mark. Tony, with the paper you and Mark helped to author, can you tell us how it came to be and what were your goals you all had in mind when you were putting this together?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Valerie. I think how it came kind of into being, that paper is very simple. We had many people who were so willing to work together and to think about this important topic, how we can involve patients more into drug development and the life cycle. And, you know, the bottom line is pretty much medicines serve patients. And so when you keep that in mind, and that's, if you want, also the raison d'etre of pharmaceutical industry and every other stakeholder in this system to serve patients, then it would be very difficult to kind of think, as Mark called it, other stakeholders solely determine what's right or what's wrong for patients. And I think for many years, as Mark said, we had utmost confidence in regulators, in payers, in physicians, in healthcare providers to give us that input, which is very important. But at the same time, we really need to understand what the patient's needs are, as Mark said so eloquently. And that was the key driver for this paper, if you like, and this listening to patients and getting their input early, and if you want one addition, really continuously over time. So this is not a one-point kind of engagement, but really a longitudinal continuous involvement should really allow for very mature and good and deep discussions, for instance, about research agendas, for instance, as Mark said, what's really a profile of this drug that would be important for you, what would be a mode of application, for instance, that would work for you, and the likes. And so what we've seen now is many individual parties in our big system have thought individually about how they want to involve patients. And there are good examples when you look at patient-centered drug development with the FDA, when you look at the European Medicines Agency, who has just made patient involvement a key priority in their agenda, when you look at individual pharma companies and many other stakeholders, they all do their own thing. And so we thought, you know, if we can get to routine involvement of patients during the whole development and life cycle, that should lead to better outcomes, but it will lead only to better outcomes when we have some sort of a common denominator, some sort of a common framework and understanding how we want to work together as all stakeholders, including patients. Because ultimately, if we individually change our system and evolve our system, if a regulator says, you know, this is how I want to work with patients, if a payer says, you know, this input is not valid for me, I need a different input or industry, then we won't reach the end result in serving patients in a better way. And that's why we've written this paper basically saying we really need to work with patients all the way from beginning to the end. And as I said, we need a joint framework that is acceptable to all stakeholders. That will be the ultimate key to success.
Tony, thank you for that. What has been the feedback since the paper was published?
So before the paper has been published, kind of while we were working on it and afterwards, we've gotten a lot of input and a lot of interest from many, many parties, from patient groups, from industry, from other stakeholders who feel this is an incredibly important topic. And so you will have seen that we formed a group, actually. We call it Patient-Focused Medicines Development. For instance, Mark and his organization and Amgen and I are part of this group as well, where we formed a consortium with the sole purpose, how can we get this into a jointly agreed-on framework, how can we get better, and many, many other initiatives have come up. So I would say, in short, this is a very, very key topic for the entire community, not just for industry. And when you look at all the pressures we kind of see around us and all the developments, this is almost like how do we get to a new societal contract. So the response has been very positive and very interested.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. And when you think about the feedback and the goals, what do you hope will come out of it? What do you want to see change?
So what we hope for is that all stakeholders really who are involved in drug development, and that significantly includes patients, play a role. And that means very much like Mark said, involvement early on, really good and informed discussions with both-way exchange, helping shape a research agenda, helping designing trials, helping thinking about endpoints, you know, even thinking about comparators. Does a patient really need a placebo? Do we really need a placebo in a trial, or could it be an active comparator? Up to really helping regulators and other decision makers in the system evaluate what the benefit risk of a particular medicine is. So it's really a system evolution, if you like, where those who benefit from the product have an important say. That's what we want to see change and what we want to see evolve. And the second point, as I said, it will only be successful if all the stakeholders in the system agree to that. There will be no chance for success if we unilaterally do it as patient organizations or as industry or as regulators. This togetherness is another desired result of the paper.
Okay, thank you. Mark, what would you want patient advocates to get out of this, or, you know, how can they play a role in making these changes?
There are a couple of ways they can play roles, and in the U.S. you're seeing some really exciting activities going on in the patient advocacy world where they are really seizing the day and moving forward to try and move this cause forward. There's an opportunity to engage with the companies, especially the companies that are working in their disease areas, to help them understand what meaningful patient engagement is. And that's a really important issue. Patient advocacy organizations as a model was created more than 300 years ago in the United States. And that model has largely been a highly effective way to organize a patient population and to advocate on their behalf. Over the course of the last 60 years, you've seen the development of very sophisticated engagement methodologies that allow you to get at very large, diverse populations, to get representative samples, to really make sound decisions based on patient engagement science that can help inform drug development. Patient community can help lead that transition. When people start thinking about, well, how do I engage a patient, it's not uncommon for people to think, well, if I walk down and tap somebody on the shoulder who has X condition and ask them what they think, I've engaged a patient. And in fact, in the early days, and Tony and I have talked about this in the past, there were some that would say, well, we do engage patients, we do clinical trials on them. Well, that's pretty passive engagement at best. What we're talking about is really understanding a population, the subpopulations within it, and what their needs are at a population level, but also at an individual level. And how does that information help you make decisions along the life cycle of developing a product? Patient community is really adept at that. That's an area where we have expertise and experience, and we can partner with companies in a collective, non-competitive way to assess information about conditions and what are most important to that patient population, even assess the burden of existing treatments, and then also help to gather this information specific to individual products. We have that capacity in many cases. We're developing it in other cases. We also provide a level of credibility when you have this conversation. What you really want to do is work with an organization that understands its patient population and can help frame some of these early questions as you go to develop the patient preference data gathering. So huge opportunities moving forward. In the U.S., we're seeing a number of patient groups already doing this and leading the way, and huge opportunities moving forward.
The process to help industry understand the patient and their view so we can better design clinical trials?
And that really is the million-dollar question right there. And I'll respond, but it would probably make sense to have Tony respond to that as well from his perspective. One of the reasons we put this paper out and one of the reasons we created PFMD, which is the acronym for the organization Tony mentioned earlier, was to start to develop that framework. There is a preference and engagement science that has existed for about 60 years and is well validated in many other arenas. For example, we certainly use this information in marketing. We use it in political science and in campaigns. And in fact, the current president of the United States was elected twice using this science very effectively. what we're talking about is applying an existing science to a new arena. And so that creates some challenges of figuring out how you do that, when you do it. And so both Tony and I have talked about this being a life cycle approach. It's not a one-stop opportunity. It's something you do throughout the continuum of drug development. And at each given point, your needs for patient engagement information could be very different. So, for example, determining whether or not to develop an asset. Are you answering the right question or addressing the right problem from a patient perspective at the very beginning? You could probably get good information about that with some fairly simple techniques like focus groups or deliberative juries, potentially even surveys or advisory groups. But if you're looking at developing information that would identify a preference that would distinguish your product as something that hits a specific need of a patient in terms of how to use the product or a side effect profile that is better for them, and you want to get that into labeling, the burden for gathering data is going to be higher and more sophisticated. You may be talking about certain survey techniques that are weighted or use conjoint analysis or other methodologies that are more sophisticated. So it's hard to give an answer that says, here's the framework, here's the process. It's really a series of options throughout the continuum and applying which one is best given where you are in the continuum, the type of product you're developing, the kind of disease that you're dealing with, the burden of the disease, the burden of existing treatment options. And that's one of the areas that PFMD is working to develop, that framework that would give you a method to evaluate what you're doing and what you could do to gather that information in a way that would be meaningful and apply it to your drug development program.
Okay. So thank you. And so Tony, let me give you an opportunity to share your point of view on this question.
Yeah, so I think Mark hit a couple of really important points, how we want to involve patients and how do we get to the right patients. I think Mark was spot on when he said one size kind of doesn't fit all. So there are many different scenarios and many different needs. It could be as simple as, what does living with the disease mean for you every day? How do you get out of bed? How do you go to the bathroom? How do you get dressed? Or it could be very sophisticated. Here is a clinical trial result. You know, what do you think of that? Is that really meaningful for you? Or earlier, you know, when we design a clinical trial, and let's say one endpoint is, can you walk for 100 meters or 100 yards, right? Is that important for you? Is it much more important for you? Can you stand up? And so I think many different models for patient involvement, depending on what the questions are and what the phase of drug development is, have to apply here. I think the common denominator is always it needs to be credible and representative patient involvement, which is very important. So while the individual patient is incredibly important to us and we want to serve each and every one, we have to make sure that when we design a trial for a medicine that may reach hundreds of thousands or more patients, that the input we've received is representative. So this is, I think, what Mark alluded to also when he talked about the methodology. And depending on, again, what the questions are, different skills may be required. So like I said, if it's about a clinical study design, I think we would be blessed to have patients or patient representatives who have some understanding about how clinical studies are designed, how the regulatory process works. And you may be interested that, for instance, in Europe, there is an organization called EUPATI, which is really sponsored both by the governments and by industry, where patients are educated in the science of drug development, where every year 50 patients graduate and they get a training in regulatory sciences and drug development so that they can very much surely answer these questions as well. And then, as Mark said, the third aspect is different tools for different scenarios. So I think we all are working on that very much as mentioned before, for example, at PFMD. But I think what you see here is a great willingness on all sides, really, and there should not be sides. In the end, again, it's to serve patients. And there is huge input from many partners there. There's not one answer, is unfortunately the short answer to your question, but I think we'll get to a good framework.
Okay. Do you see any major obstacles in the way to empathize and understand the patient's view? Is there anything that you feel it gets in our way, or is it just us getting in our way?
So, you know, in the end, I think we all want to do it. I think it's all a little bit about, okay, when I get input, what do I do with it, right? Who makes the decisions? It's a little bit kind of really giving up control to some degree. Of course, a patient will not be the ultimate decision maker. It will be a whole group of people and stakeholders who will make decisions. But I think the patient will be a very important part of that decision process. I think it's about finding the right methodology. I think it's about finding, as I said, the representative patient groups who have the right skills for the right questions. So my sense is we will evolve the system to get there. You know, it's always difficult to do something new. But again, you know, the whole purpose of the whole system is to serve patients. So we will get there. And in the end, it's just a matter of, do we really want to do it, I think, is kind of my word on this one.
So I'll add a little bit. Sorry. Do you mind if I add a little bit to that? I think it's an important issue, and that is that when you're talking about change, and this really is a cultural shift in drug development, change really happens when there's tension to promote that change. And things like publishing this paper were partially designed to create that tension to accomplish change. I think some of our greatest risks are that the momentum in terms of creating that dynamic for change needs to last long enough for us to shift culture within each of the stakeholders, and that includes the biopharmaceutical sector, it includes the regulator, it even includes the patient community, which certainly supports this, but it's a different arena for us to be promoting this kind of dynamic change. Two very specific issues that I think could derail this. One, if the regulator responds in a way that makes it very difficult for us to effectively incorporate the patient perspective into drug development, to allow it to inform benefit risk determinations, to allow it to make it into labeling so that people can make informed decisions about which treatments they take. That could derail this. If we don't get this right, it could make it very difficult, very expensive. So there are a lot of things in the environment that are moving. In addition, when you look at the payers across the United States and globally, they have a huge role to play. And here Antonio has emphasized that this is an area where we need all stakeholders. We all have to be in this. The payer needs to be looking at how patient engagement in the development of drugs will help them to get the right treatment to the right patient at the right time at the most cost-effective point. Currently, that does not happen in most delivery systems globally. That's a new change as well. So there's a lot to this, but if we do it right, it means getting higher value treatments at the back end. It means higher and better outcomes that are responsive to patient need, and it means more effective delivery systems that are actually saving money by getting the right care that meets the goals and preferences of the right patient.
So I'll join in here again because this is a really exciting discussion. So I would even add, Valerie, you know, if we do this right, if we really involve patients and all other stakeholders together, the drug development process should become more efficient, right? Maybe we need different trials, maybe we need a smaller sample size sometimes, maybe the endpoints will be much more meaningful. So I think this is really about a societal evolution. That's what this is. When we involve all stakeholders, responsible, bring in the patient's view, and then ultimately get to better outcomes. And that was, if you like, the postulate in our paper as well, that it should lead to better outcomes for everyone.
So, Valerie, you can tell Tony and I are not passionate at all about any of this.
No, indeed, not at all.
So on that point, I mean, we just discussed that, you know, would it lead to better outcomes when we really have continuous and meaningful patient involvement? You representing so many patients in the United States, what's your view on this? What do you think the odds are that we really reach better overall outcomes for everyone, for the payers, for the regulators, for industry, for patients?
I from my perspective, that's at the heart of the reason why the National Health Council is so involved in this effort. If you can ensure that the treatments that are developed are aligned with what's important to the patient, you have an opportunity to really drive compliance, adherence, which are huge factors in patient outcomes, as you know. One of the things that we talk about here at the National Health Council in the U.S. is what we've sort of dubbed the chronic care trifecta. And a chronic care trifecta means that patients aren't just looking for a clinical outcome. They're looking for a clinical outcome in the context of their personal goals and their life circumstances. And every individual has a set of goals, even at end of life. And those goals really largely define what treatments are going to be most appropriate for you. Your life circumstances has huge impacts on that. So I'll give you a couple of examples. If you're somebody with Parkinson's, or if you take two people with Parkinson's who are at roughly the same stage of the disease, and you look at the different treatment options that are available, you may have one person with Parkinson's that wants to make sure that his or her employer doesn't realize that they have a neurologic condition because they're afraid that they're going to be discriminated against or not get a promotion or lose their job. You might have another person who is really concerned about being able to sleep well and have relationships with his significant other. Those two goals will largely determine which treatment would be best for them. And yet, in the delivery system, those are issues that are not picked up on. What we've begun to focus on in terms of medicine development is the age of personalized medicine and really focusing in on the genetics of individuals. And there's been great progress there. Amgen has been a leader in that space, as you know. But at the end of the day, aligning a medicine with someone's genetics is critically important, but that's still a small percentage of medicines that are available. Hopefully we're going to do better and do more in that arena. But also aligning a medicine with what's important to the patient in terms of their goals and their personal aspirations is just as important. And when you speak with the researchers that look at issues around adherence and compliance, they'll tell you there are 20 to 27, maybe 30 reasons why people are not compliant and adherent with their treatments. But when you boil them down, it really comes down to their goals and aspirations and their life circumstances. And if you account for those two and align a medicine with that, compliance and adherence goes up. That leads to better health outcomes. And ultimately, it has the opportunity to reduce costs. As emerging research is showing that when you do this, you provide an opportunity for patients to make informed decisions about getting the treatments that are aligned with what's important to them. They tend to choose less costly, less invasive treatments. It may mean a shift to more medicines, but it means a shift away from so many other elements of the care delivery system that are much more expensive.
So I really like what you're saying. You know, first of all, the arguments of compliance and adherence, when you benefit from a medicine and this is prescribed and you agree to take it, how do you really stay with it and continue to benefit from it? The other thing I think that's extremely important is choice, right? Mm-hmm. So since you are the mature, responsible part of this whole system as a patient, you should have a choice. And I think as and when we involve patients in drug development, we will learn much more about, as you explained, your choices, what's important for you personally, and maybe which endpoints could we use that are then representative for a large group of patients that would help you make this choice, this informed choice, whether this medicine or that other medicine helps you. And, you know, another point for me for patient involvement, responsible involvement in drug development and life cycle is something we haven't covered yet. That's when we do clinical studies, and Valerie talked about that before, it costs a lot of money. Many, many thousands of patients volunteer to contribute to clinical studies. I think when you volunteer into really helping develop a new medicine, there's a very good reason that you should also have a say in how do we evaluate that medicine as far as you can give the input, and again, which designs, which endpoints, which observation periods might be important for you. And then, of course, many other stakeholders weigh in, but I think that's another important point so that ultimately we have a better outcome. And as you said, we perhaps can save some cost during drug development and most certainly later on in the healthcare system when a patient has their choice and has contributed to the development.
As we're getting closer to wrapping up, I wanted to ask both of you what you are excited about. What are you optimistic about for next steps? Mark, can I start with you?
Sure. In terms of next steps, we are going to develop a framework that will evolve over time, and I think that framework will become the basis of the work of many companies globally. Certainly here in the United States, we are moving forward with the development of guidance for patient engagement in drug development, and that is being led by the National Health Council and the Genetic Alliance, as well as participants from all stakeholders of the healthcare system. You're seeing efforts in Europe and elsewhere. So I am quite confident that despite the challenges in creating this change dynamic, we're going to create the right incentives, eliminate some of the barriers to doing this, provide the how-to in terms of a framework. And we're going to see this become a reality over the next several years where it becomes the norm for companies to engage patients throughout drug development. It's going to take us a while to get to the point where these products are coming into the marketplace. But as they're coming into the marketplace, we're seeing a great deal of energy here in the United States in particular to realign delivery systems so that they respond to the preferences of patients, that we get this information into labeling, and patients, especially those with chronic conditions, are in a situation where they can make an informed decision about which treatment is aligned with what's important to them. And that's going to dramatically change how outcomes are measured in the United States, improve outcomes for patients, and create a very different business model for industry to compete on products that are not only safe and effective, but address certain preferences that are important to patients.
And it's an exciting time because all of us involved in the industry, whether it be from pharma or regulatory or patients, have an opportunity to be part of this change. And so, Tony, let me ask you what you're enthusiastic about, what you're optimistic about for next steps.
So the long term or the big next step, as we said, is to really make this happen and to have responsible patient involvement. That's what makes me so excited. Immediate next steps, very much as Mark said, we agreed that we'll need to build the framework, how we want to do it, so that we agree with all the stakeholders on the individual steps on that journey so that ultimately we have a more smooth and a more efficient drug development process that's also informed by patients. And if you want the immediate next step, as many companies do, for instance, at Amgen, we look very hard about how we can shape our own processes and our own way of working to really serve our mission, which is literally, this is a verbatim quote, to serve patients. And so we're taking really quite some initiative inside the company in order to reach that goal as one contributor. And then on the bigger level, as we said, in forums like PFMD, which is also an immediate next step, patient-focused medicines development, to work together to develop that. There's so much that excites me here because I really believe it will lead to better outcomes for everyone.
And the evolution is a process. It's now. We can all get involved and make a difference. And I love the ultimate goal, if I may paraphrase, to say that patient engagement will become the norm. That sounds like a wonderful goal for what the end of the road looks like, if you will.
The name of the paper, again, we've been referring to throughout this program is called Partnering with Patients in the Development and Life Cycles of Medicine, The Call for Action. It could be found easily through Google, and it was published in 2015 by the DIA. Both Tony and Mark will be speaking this March at the Patients with Partners event. For more information, please visit www.theconferenceforum.org. Thank you so much, Tony and Mark, for joining us, and thanks, everyone, for listening.